Again this year, WHDH takes pleasure in presenting the 1954-1955 series of Harvard Law School Forums. Tonight's broadcast comes to you from the new lecture hall in Cambridge. Crisis in Education will be discussed tonight by President Nathan Pusey of Harvard, Dr. Robert Ulick, Professor of Education at Harvard, Mr. Frederick Weed, Headmaster at Roxbury Latin School, and Mr. Lee Dunn from Boston Latin School. Mr. Dunn is now speaking.
About some amount of tax facilities or tax rate which produces the facilities to take care of some of the number. And where will this number fall? Dr. Dale Wolfley, the director of the Commission on Human Resources, estimates from seemingly adequate data that the shortages for the next 20 years at least in the natural sciences, humanities, and the higher levels, engineering, business, teaching, and medicine. This pattern is considerably more developed by Dr. White in his famous Virginia study, when he points out that if you think this problem is going to end in 1970, that the state of Virginia in 1952 had more births than any year previous. And 1953, up to the seventh month thereof, was running ahead. What will be the result? To solve the problem, the public must be made aware of it. Newspaper articles on education and the cost of education are skipped, particularly those with statistics. A sample. A raise of $120 was granted the teachers of a neighboring town here. It was editorialized upon, and the increase in the tax rate was figured out to the third and the fourth decimal. And lest you think that I have exaggerated that particular phase, I have two clippings here. One from two different Boston newspapers. One which is a very quiet one, speaking of a new committee of citizens seek to double state aid. And no place in the article of the regular news clipping is there any mention outside of the fact of the manner of collecting the monies for this, outside of the fact that property tax will not bear the burden. The editorial, which appears in another paper a couple of days later, says, although Halloween won't be observed until the end of the month, a familiar spook is back in our midst, to the understandable indignation and consternation of politicians who are long on personal praises and short on pertinent issues. The spook is the sales tax. And then it goes on to say that the whole argument on this question is a question of putting the sales tax in. How are we going to inform the people? And I think at this moment, it would be a good time to stop so that we can go on with the air. Go.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dunn. Good evening. We have been listening to a program on crisis in education, an offering of the Harvard Law School Forum. The speakers on this evening's program are President Nathan M. Pusey of Harvard University, Headmaster Frederick Weed of Roxbury Latin School, Dr. Robert Ulick, Conant Professor of Education in the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and Mr. Lee J. Dunn, Senior Advisor in the Boston Latin School. This evening, the speakers have directed most of their observations to the problems of the secondary schools and the growing problem of the admission from secondary school to our colleges. However, at this point, I wish to ask each speaker to state very briefly the thesis which he has been presenting to the audience earlier this evening. Dr. Pusey?
The first point I was trying to make was that there isn't any real conflict or contest between public and private education. We have a pattern of educational institutions in this country made up of both kinds, and it would be helpful if we came to think of them as sharing in one major responsibility. The real difference between the two is that the public schools are committed to providing a number of types of education to meet the great variety of kinds of people that nature supplies. The private ones can choose a limited part of the total educational task and concentrate on that. This is an important task and something that they should go along with. I think the real problem is, in both cases, to get an adequate number of teachers. And I had two suggestions to offer at that point. One, that college teachers do what they can to make teaching seem an interesting profession to young people in their classes. Secondly, that school boards, boards of education in states, examine the possibility of relaxing the exacting requirements of technical courses that now seem to prevent the easy admission of people from liberal arts colleges to the teaching profession.
Thank you. Mr. Weed is president of the Independent School Association of Massachusetts, a body comprising about 70 Massachusetts private schools, and hence can approach the subject not merely from the standpoint of his own school, but that of a group of schools in the Commonwealth. Mr. Weed, could you summarize for us your points?
Moderator? I endeavor to divide my talk on the crisis in education in this country into a threefold division, and for convenience sake, you recall, label them yesterday's crisis, today's crisis, and tomorrow's crisis. It is my feeling that yesterday's crisis resulted in the application of the democratic principle of equality of opportunity to all, but had been misapplied when placed in education to the equal reward for all students, regardless of their abilities or their efforts, so that we had a great number of ill-prepared students who graduated from our schools that I have a feeling would have benefited more for themselves if some of them, at least, had not graduated. Then when we move to today's crisis, I mention this as a result of having so many in our schools and passing them along from year to year, resulting in what I feel is a lowered standard or a standard of mediocrity in our schools. With this lower standard in our schools, and with so many graduating, there are a great number who are anxious to go on into higher education, and we just have not the facilities, either now or in the future, to cope with all those who would like to go to college. The crisis of the future, or of tomorrow, is, of course, coping with these numbers of hopeful boys and girls who would like to go on to college but seem ill-prepared for that further education. While I believe that there will be a number of well-prepared students, and an increasing number of well-prepared students, I feel the chief difficulty for them will be the providing of adequate teaching at these higher levels, as well as teaching throughout the school systems. But I think that somehow, with Yankee ingenuity or imagination, once we have provided the teaching force, we can somehow or other provide the space and equipment necessary for the education of this increased number of deserving students for higher education.
Thank you, Mr. Weed. Dr. Ulick brings to his contribution to our symposium a distinguished experience in university teaching and educational administration in Germany, having held professorships and administrative posts in Saxony up until 1934, when we had the good fortune to have him come to Harvard University. Would you summarize your position, Dr. Ulick?
I first spoke with the present criticism of American education saying that much of that criticism is justified, but on the other hand, much of the criticism is based on one-sided criteria which distort the totality of the American education. In order to come to and arrive at a more proper evaluation, we have to ask the question, what has the American school system done in our total historical development? Its tasks were primarily, first of all, to create an enlightened citizenry. It is very difficult for us to judge to what degree that task has been accomplished, but at least this nation has survived within a democratic framework, whereas other nations proud of their educational systems have broken down. The second task to provide unity for this nation, and that has been accomplished to a very high degree, perhaps not merely because of the schools, but also because of other factors. But nevertheless, the schools were influential. The third great task was to Americanize, or to get into the life of the nation, an enormous number of immigrants who for the past 150 years have come to this country. And whatever one may say about the melting pot and whether it has functioned or not, nevertheless, the immigrants themselves and their sons have been willing to cooperate and even to die for this country. In my criticism of the present American school system, I said that too many of the educators have perhaps been too complacent, not realizing that we are in a new situation, in a situation of both international and political and also ideological competition. In view of this fact, we have to develop more effective means for developing every great talent in this nation to its maximum capacity. And here is now the critical point. How can we do it without at the same time destroying one of the cherished possessions of America, namely a united and unifying school system? How can we have differentiation and at the same time provide the unity in our American school system? The other factor is, of my criticism, that I feel that in a kind of admiration for the scientific approach to every problem of life, our schools and our schools of education have neglected too much the humanistic, philosophical, let us say, the inspirational approach to the problems of civilization. We are almost afraid to speak of things which we cannot prove empirically and statistically, but in the long run that is not empirical. That is unempirical because it deprives a nation of its great vision.
Thank you, Dr. Ulick. Mr. Donohue speaks to us from the vantage point of America's oldest secondary school, the Boston Latin School, has regaled us with some rather grim statistics. I wonder if you will summarize, or perhaps I should say very hopeful statistics. Can you summarize your position, Mr. Donohue?
Well, in this surging population growth that is facing the schools, the colleges of the country, I think the two things have been not developed to the nth degree. The first is that the question of what are the private colleges and the private secondary schools going to do about the problem, which at the present moment seems to be they are going to expand very little, or if at all. And the second point is what are the public schools, both secondary and college, going to do about it? And that is the question before the House. When 18%, the top 18% of our population in senior high schools or private secondary schools have, as I pointed out, IQs in the superior classification, and that out of that group, only 2 in 5 actually go to college, and 1 in 5 would go if given the financial help, and 2 in 5 don't care very much whether they go or not, brings Professor Ulick's point well to hand, that we do have to worry about the use of the brains that we do possess. And if we are letting 3 out of 5 of those of our superior group go without this college education, then something is decidedly wrong. The worry before the group right now is the whole question of this surging population. And when this population does hit, and it will hit next year at the real level of the colleges, then the problem is going to become intensified and public support will be needed. And to my mind, the biggest problem and the biggest crisis in education is really how can we sell the public the necessity for the great enlargement of the whole educational system on the public side.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. At this time, the members of the panel will be given an opportunity to cross-examine each other. In due course, questions from the floor will be invited. I think perhaps to start the ball rolling, I will toss a question to Dr. Pusick. Mr. Dunn has given us statistics which indicate that perhaps by 1970 we shall find an increase of approximately 1,000% in our college, 300% in our college population. I find a slight mathematical error. But I think the problem, the dimension still remains substantial. This seems to me that Dr. Pusick presents a problem not merely of finding teachers for the secondary schools, which we were considering earlier, but also for the colleges. I think we shall be able to meet that rising demand in so short a time.
I don't know just what your question is here, whether it has to do with where we're going to find the college teachers. That is going to be difficult. I stated, I think, in my first speech that the number of people getting PhDs is about the same now as it was 10 or 15 years ago. There are people also who think there are too many. It has been true that it has been difficult in some subject matters in recent years for people getting PhDs to get good teaching jobs in colleges. I think we're just about to find a reversal here where the demand for teachers will be so great that anyone can have his choice of a number of jobs if he has a PhD, and many people without the PhD will be teaching in college. This is just a thing we'll have to face up to. Where we're going to get all these teachers, I don't know. Another thing we're going to have to do is look a little more closely at teaching techniques and methods and see if there's something that can be discovered to help us out at that point. I would like, if I may, to take another direction at this point and comment on one thing that Mr. Dunn said. Is that in order? Not
so.
Direct answer to your question. I was a little disturbed by his statement that, which I thought he made, that Harvard should not, should give up the notion that it wants to be a national university. At least that it should not give scholarships to people if it could be avoided outside this particular area. I think this is a very serious mistake here that I'd like to try to correct. More than a third of the students in Harvard College come from New England. I suspect this will always be true, and it's something that we will glory in. But Harvard long since ceased to be the property of New England. It is not owned, it was not built just by people from Boston or even Massachusetts or even New England. Great contributions have come to Harvard from people who live outside New England. I don't know, but I suspect probably about equal amounts of people in the Middle Atlantic states. The people from other parts of the country have adopted this college and have given money to it and have provided scholarships. I think that it will be true for a long while that monies given from outside here will be used for the people that were intended, namely people who come from other regions. I would like to say, personally, I was very happy that a wife as a prominent man in the state of Iowa, set up a scholarship which made it possible for me to come here, and I hope that this will continue to be possible for a long while to come. Another point that is more serious. The pressures for us to start an exclusion act against people from outside the continental United States are going to become more severe earlier than the ones to exclude the people from Iowa or California. I think this also would be regrettable. We will do our best by these New England students, who will always be the largest part of the Harvard enrollment, if we bring into their society people from other parts of the country and the world, because they learn from each other, and it would be a poor education if they didn't have this experience.
Thank you. I would be very happy to comment upon Dr. Cusey's remark. In the first place, I was very careful not to mention Harvard as far as those scholarships were concerned. I was very careful to say Ivy League. But as long as the Harvard has come to the fore, I would like to say it from this point of view. The national scholarships and the whole national scholarship program of Harvard has nothing but the greatest of praise from your humble servant. What I am driving at on the picture of going out and getting these students is the fact that there has been a definite effort to find students in the far west over the last several years. And the gentleman from California came here with the idea of taking some of them back from the East. Now, I submit that if this is true, this gentleman from California's statement, that the colleges are coming out there and skimming off their cream, and they're coming here to skim off, well, Harvard's cream for the moment, then it's an absurd situation. Because if they offer a scholarship, as they did, or scholarships, to boys from Boston Latin, and take them out to the West Coast, that scholarship pays about the transportation bill that would be run up in the air. Whereas if the money were available here, he might well use it for an institution closer to home. I had no intention of saying that the scholarship should not be continued, Doctor, or that the whole picture of Harvard's general distribution should not be continued. I am merely saying that it seems peculiar to have a geographical distribution worried about when at home we have a problem too.
Regarding your speech a bit further, Mr. Dunn, it seems to me what you've described is a homogenized situation. Would you wish to add a word?
Well, I do. I would feel that that is a wholly good thing. The more we can move people around, the better.
Any other member of the panel wish to question his fellows?
Dr. Cusey mentioned quite commonly as a ticket to college education and a PhD. I know that many fine professors have PhDs. I know in the world at large there are areas where there's a certain hesitancy on the public approval of the PhD. I think I'm correct in saying that his teacher and my teachers are two of Harvard's most famous recent teachers, George Lyman Kittredge and Bliss Perry, were both without PhD degrees. I wondered if he would speak a little bit more whether he felt that PhD was essential for college teaching at the highest level, or whether I have misapplied this easy designation for college teaching material from the words that he just spoke.
I can reply to that probably best by saying there are a great many people teaching in the college now without the PhD degree who one would not compare with Professor Kittredge.
Felix, do you have a question?
I would like to ask Professor Reed about one question. He said that many of our young people might be, if I quote him correctly, better off if they have not graduated from high school. I would admit that there are many who should not graduate from high school in the sense as running around with a certificate of advanced accomplishment in the field of learning. But on the other hand, I'm a little bit worried what he is going to do with these young people if they are not to be in school. In our technical society, we no longer need, and that is one of the great problems. In our technical society, we no longer need the muscle and the vigor and the strength of young people. Consequently, we are in school. And it is a tragic thing to say, but it is so, that many of our young people are in high schools because they need a parking place. But how can we change it? Then we have to throw them out from the school, and then they are on the street. And that is a terrifically difficult problem. We have to create institutions for those who are not fitted for intellectual learning, nevertheless to keep them in some kind of apprenticeship toward life so that they are not idle.
Don, do you have a question to put to the panel?
The only question I want to know from Dr. Pusey is that when we get these teachers, how are they going to be distributed? And if the university is going to have, the university being a general term, have the first opportunity of getting them, how are they going to filter down if the PhDs, the MAs, and the other advanced degrees are kept being required by the various school authorities on the lower level? They're never going to get that group down to the secondary school. The PhD is forgotten by the college, let us say, for the moment with this influx. They'll take the AMs. Why should then anybody in the secondary school level bother to get an AM? Let's get an AB. Yet we have these requirements of school committees that you have AB, AM, and so on through the line.
I'm not quite sure I understand your question, but I think the implication is that people get advanced degrees to get jobs. I don't think I would admit that premise.
No.
I think that people get advanced degrees in many cases because they're really interested in the subject or the field of investigation. I think that out of the people going to college, we will always have a certain percentage who will want to go on to advanced work. There aren't enough people with advanced degrees now to meet the demand for them in the school. Also, it's perfectly true they've made a fetish out of the PhD degree, and I wouldn't be the last person to argue that just because you have one of these behind your name, that means you're a superior teacher. There are a great many people with it who are not at all as good as some others who don't have them, as was implied earlier. But I don't think we should let ourselves get into a situation where we thought that advanced study and advanced work was not necessary. I think we want to do everything to insist on more and more of this. Indeed, I think we can make progress if we would cease to think of the degrees in any sense as terminated education, but to get everyone recognizing that learning is something that goes on through life. I think we need to be more imaginative in the requirements now set up for teachers to do summer study than we have been, and find ways to let them take courses that will be more exciting intellectually and not simply go on repeating courses and methods because the local school board, someone wants them to do it. The degree isn't important. It's the continuing process of learning that is. And we won't have teachers unless we can make this just something that people do. Not because it means more dollars, they do it because they want to do it.
At this point, we would like to ask some questions from the floor. And if those of you who feel moved to put questions to the panel will come down to the microphone here and indicate both your name and the member of the panel to whom you wish to address your question, we should be delighted to provide answers.
George Faraday, Assistant Professor of History at Boston College. A question to ask of Mr. Wee. Mr. Wee, why are teachers, because as you say, they are more cultured and educated, entitled to a higher salary than truck drivers?
feeling, sir, that we've got to give some compensation for additional training. I feel that most teachers, college graduates, normal school, possibly advanced college work, and as we have in the field of medicine, additional years of preparation, that there somehow those additional years of preparation should be received additional compensation. I am not very familiar with a cross section or many individuals.